There she is. Okay, we're ready. We got everybody. All right, welcome to the December 11th Board of County Commissioners work session. Commissioner Sinclair is joining us remotely because she's got a committee meeting in Olympia. That's right, isn't it? I think that's what's going on. All right, first is county administration.
Yeah, good morning, commissioners. I have an item here. The first item before you is a request from the Port of South Whidbey for a grant timeline extension. In 2018, the port received a grant of about $688,000, and they've been working through that money. Obviously, COVID dropped in the middle of that time frame, and the port is here to discuss and request an additional few months to get this taken care of, extending the contract to June 30, 2025. Angie Mosier and Kirk Borden are here with the board, and I think they can probably explain it and speak to it much better than I can.
Good morning, Angie Moser, Executive Director for the Port of South Whidbey. As Michael mentioned, our grant funds that were awarded in 2018 are set to expire here in a couple weeks. We have been working pretty diligently this year through some major projects, and we got a lot done this year. However, we did experience a couple of obstacles this year. One was we have an on-call engineer, and they experienced delays in their work. I suspect that I did give them a large workload as I was really chugging through these projects, plus many others at the fairgrounds and beyond. However, I don't see it as an excuse, but as it turns out, they were delayed in their deliverables for a lot of these projects. Another obstacle we encountered was our fairgrounds director was out on extended medical leave. She initiated her leave in April. While she was trying to figure out what was going on, she was going through month by month, continuing her leave. So as a management level person that I couldn't really replace because I thought she was coming back but didn't. So I covered for her, and it was during the summer event season, Ren Faire, Whidbey Island Fair, these things were occurring and I was covering for her. And so I was a little bit distracted from really focusing on these projects. That being said, I can talk about a couple of the major projects that are well underway and should be completed soon. The first is the campgrounds hookups, the utilities renovation. The electrical infrastructure there is dated and not in conduits and sporadically doesn't work. The water infrastructure, same, has been installed over the years piecemeal. When there are leaks, we don't know that there's leaks. The engineer has fully developed design and engineering for that system. It is complete, out to bid already. On Monday, we had a pre-bid site meeting. About 10 to 15 contractors were there, very well attended. I advertised it widely. Bids are due next week. In those bid documents, it dictates a completion date of March 15th. So I am confident that this will be done by June. Another major project we've been working on is the drainage, the current infrastructure. There's a little bit of infrastructure that takes some of the stormwater to the city stormwater management system. We have worked with the engineer extensively this year to develop plans for managing stormwater on the property. We just received some drawings for a system down near the bottom of the property to collect some stormwater. So I am confident we'll be able to get a lot of that done before June as well. And there are other various projects here and there. It's a big project, complicated one, several different smaller projects that we're still working on as well. But those are the major ones that, by June we will invoice $300,000 of what's remaining for those projects. So I'm confident we can get at least that much done by June.
So on this, Angie, you say that we estimate spending about 340 of our remaining 450 grant funds. So of that other 110,000 grant funds, are there parts of your original grant that will still be out there? What will still be remaining that and uncompleted at that point?
Most of it, honestly, is work that has been completed by staff or volunteers. So, for example, the Kaufman Building, there's an alcove and the wall was falling. And we assumed tens of thousands of dollars, if not more, to repair that. We had an engineer take a look at it, provide some specifications, and then we ended up having volunteers do that for $1,500 in materials. So, renovating the pole building, the fairground staff are very savvy in that way, and they were able to paint and decorate and make it a much nicer space. So most of it has been cost savings with how we manage those particular projects.
Was your heat in the pole ever part of this line of okay? And you we can't. I mean, we as part of this, we managed to bring three-phase power to the site, and our goal was always to bring it down to the buildings because you can't heat these buildings with propane. There is no natural gas lines. We're trying to figure out a way to heat an old building without insulating it. And the only way to do that is going to be three-phase power. And three-phase power has been an advantage in the Kaufman Building as well because it's the best to use for these large cooking and kitchen items. So there is that still left, if that's what you were asking.
Yeah, what I'm wondering is if you're going to come back in June and say, well, we got all these things done, but now we want an extension for this other $110,000 so we can do X, Y, and Z. And I'm just wondering what X, Y, and Z is, if that's going to happen.
If we get this extension and it's for the whole grant, we are well underway. For example, that project as well. We've worked with engineers, we've worked with contractors to figure out what we can and can't do. It would be my plan to do that as well. That is in that estimate, but there are just various projects in here that have been completed well under budget. So I wouldn't expect that we'll be back to ask for another extension. And that these projects will be complete for this budget year.
Janet.
Yeah, so I'm confused, Angie, between what you said and what Kurt said. I had the same question as Commissioner Bacon. So the page four of our packet says that there's a fi there's the final project of Camp Grouter ground water and electric at 360. That's on out to bid.
Right.
You're asking for an extension. Then you talked about radiant heating to the pole building in the packet, yet you said we had savings. And so I'm getting confused between what you said and what Kurt said. I just would like to get clarified. Is the remaining 110 going to go under the bullet points of the following projects?
Let me clarify one thing, which is that heat in pole is different from renovating pole. Actually, pole building has three projects in here. One is electrical upgrades, renovations, and heat. The renovations have been substantially completed. We had budgeted $25,000 of grant funds for that. We spent $1,000. Electricity upgrade. We replaced panels in the building. Those panels are not going to support the heat. It's not enough. Yes, we plan to bring three-phase power to the pole building to do heating. That is part of the expenditure plan here as of page four. I just picked the biggest projects to talk about it and keep things as simple as possible, but that is part of the plan here to expend those dollars before the end of June. Let's see here.
But you weren't expecting to get three-phase power down there before the end of June, were you? Were you?
I'm gonna try,
Okay.
but it.
So I think part of it, Janet, by the way, good morning.
Good morning.
I think part of it was Angie's asking for, she's trying not to be presumptive, and she's asking for what she knows she can do. We don't know what heating the pole is really going to end up costing in the long run. We don't even have a design project. So even though it's critical and it's important, we can't sit here and say it'll be all done by X. So I think that's probably why that isn't.
And I will say my approach is that we are well underway on some major projects, and I'm panicking a little bit that we don't have grant funds to support that. And so my priority is to make sure we don't end up having to use our own funds where I was depending specifically on these grant funds, and projects are full force right now.
It would be helpful, and it's not gonna, you know, I'm gonna be supportive because you've been progressively working through this under tough challenges, but it would be helpful to have a spreadsheet that says, here's the remaining projects, here's the estimated cost, and here's the funding source before the board, so we know what we're extending and what we're paying for in either this or future meetings. Because it both the narrative and the thing got a little confusing for me as to what we're extending the funding to pay for. And that's where I appreciate the intention of not being presumptive. That's great. And I'm going to be supportive because you've been systematically moving through some really tough times on these things. But the way when I'm looking at a budget, it's really wanting to look at specifics, because that's what the board and the specifics as they reside within our contract, right? We have a contract. If you know, as we go down in the packet, we have what was expected and all of that, so that we can make sure we're approving work that we, the scope of work that we already approved, and just extending it. That's my feedback. Is just that's helpful to me in future presentations.
And I can speak to that a little bit, Commissioner. This extension is just an extension of time. Previously, the board, an extension or two ago, the board approved some reallocation of funds. Uh-huh. That will still be in place. And so essentially what the board has already approved money to be spent on is what money can be spent on under this extension.
That's and that what I'm trying to
our administrative processes. This won't change any of that. Angie's explanations actually fit with that parameter, except the fact that they're coming in under budget. So they probably will leave some money on the table in the end. But otherwise, it fits the reallocation that was approved, I think, in the last extension, or maybe it was before that.
Michael, that's really helpful to me. Thank you. And Angie, thank you for your diligence in this.
I would be supportive of extending it to December 2025. I mean, I appreciate what you're saying, but you've got drainage on here. My experience with drainage is that when you put something in the ground, it's going to go wrong. And so I don't know. I mean, if there needs to be permits, the timeline for permitting, I mean, it's just, there's a lot of variables, even from my life experience, which is limited, but it never goes as smooth as I hope. So I would just recommend we do a year extension to give some wiggle room in there, and that you're not back here in June telling us that, oh, we got in there and it was different than we thought. And we've had to, I mean, I trust your project management skills. What I don't trust is a shovel in the ground. So, I mean, my recommendation is just to say, let's get this closed out by the end of 2025. So that timeline isn't so compressed that you have to come back and ask for 6 more months.
Good suggestion, Jim.
If that works with everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, we want to get this closed out. We believe in these projects. I know you're ready to go to the next phase of whatever is envisioned there. So I think we just say 2025 is the year to get it done. Then we can do the contract all.
Then. And then just and bring this to consent,
yeah.
Then.
And then okay. Consent, everybody.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, okay. I agree with that.
Would be great. Thank you.
Thank you. Drainage fear.
Yeah. Project fear.
Excellent suggestion.
Any project.
Yeah, any project.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Appreciate Christian. Thank you guys for being very transparent and working through it.
Thank you for your support.
Great.
And Jake, you'll stop at my office before you leave and amend it to the date and then sign it so that she can just move it forward.
Oh, she's here.
She's right there.
Lindsay's on it.
But we do have that challenge. So if you guys
we can walk back over there.
Yeah, okay. Sorry, Lindsay.
Thank you.
All right. Great.
Great day, you guys.
Thanks
for coming down.
Are you okay with that? Just walk
over. How do we feel about broadband?
Wonderful. Cody has a presentation, so we'll give him a second, I think, to get that ready to roll. And this is essentially a broadband update and also speaking to an MOU with an entity called BroadLink, which is a sort of a spinoff of Spokane County that's working through broadband efforts that we've been cooperating with to spend some WASAC funds. A group of counties got together in deciding that it would be better to do that in a coordinated fashion rather than all like one-offs, basically getting five contracts to do the same thing and spend a lot of extra money on contract management. I'm probably stealing Cody's thunder here, but basically BroadLink through Spokane County has said they'd really like an MOU. So we already have the contract and the board's already approved to doing what we're doing in a previous action. But now BroadLink is like, can we have an MOU? It just seems like there should be a more formal agreement. Sorry.
Good morning.
Take it away.
Cody Locking, ARPA Broadband Coordinator. So I do have a little presentation for you and I'll go through all of it for your information.
Oh, that's weird. There's something crazy going on up there.
Uh-oh.
We'll work through it.
Oh, I think it's
just the layers probably, right?
Yeah, it's the layers showing from my window. I apologize. Because I have the CC on, so
oh,
that's
yeah,
what.
Right, it's
yeah, that's what that is.
That's strange.
So
we're all right.
You know where you are and what
yeah,
day it is.
It just says the presentation. Okay. Come on. So I have a short agenda, just to keep things brief. We're going to show you my terms again, just so that you're familiar with the language that I'm going to be using. And then I'll go over some of the projects that I'm working on related to the Broadband Equity, Accessibility, and Development Program. So these words are what's going to be used. There's nothing under there. Going to be used the most. For your use, all those definitions are at the end of the presentation in your packet, but I can pull them up here as we go through if you need.
What's BSI, BSL?
Broadband Serviceable Location.
Okay.
In the context of BEAD, we're talking about homes.
Okay.
There we go. So the Technical Assistance MOU, we applied for support from BroadLink in Spokane to explore the details of BEAD and how we can be involved as a county if we're not going to be building or owning any infrastructure, right? We're still involved, we still need to be involved. This was paid for, as Michael said, by a grant from the legislature that went to WASAC. The MOU is between Island County and BroadLink. To clarify just the legal aspects of the working relationship that we've been basically doing since like July. But there's no monies coming from Island County whatsoever. This is paid for by WASAC. So one of the projects that we're working on is this BSL verification. And I wanted to show the various layers of data that we're applying to verify these homes that need to be served. So this is not a selection of all the locations that need to be served in this hex. This is just the verification of, are these buildings qualified as a BSL, a broadband serviceable location for this program. So the hex is the project area that we're looking at. And then the blue outlines are building footprints that are big enough to be a housing unit. The red outlines are ones that are too small. They're probably a shed, a dog house, something like that. We've got the red dots are those homes. Like that's the FCC information saying that this is a broadband serviceable location. And then the yellow crosses are addresses confirmed by Google Maps. We have smaller black dots, and those smaller black dots are the registered addresses from our database with Island County, confirmed through the assessor's database. And then the orange outlines are the parcel boundaries, and then white lines are the roads. So you can see we're layering a lot of different data to make sure that these locations are accurate. We don't want to be building to a haystack or a doghouse, or no, I correct myself. We don't want anyone who's doing the project to be building to a location that's not actually a real home, right?
But those undeveloped locations, which have the potential to become homes, they have infrastructure they can pull from at time of development, or are they just left out?
So the program is specifically for building two homes that need to be served. So if there is a parcel that doesn't have a qualified location home, then it can be passed, but it wouldn't be, they wouldn't have any further infrastructure built to go to a building that isn't there.
But it will, in many instances, a project would end up putting it on the road in front of that property. Yeah. So it does right. do
so
kind of what you're speaking
have
to.
Access, you just have to
yeah.
put your personal portion in
right.
at the time of development.
Right. Yeah, but the developer of the infrastructure will have no obligation under that the federal program to serve a house that's not there, essentially.
So my question has to do with really the area. So this parcel right here is not included, is that correct?
Right. So it's not, the project areas were not built based on parcels. And the green hex doesn't actually demonstrate what is the project area. It is a visual layer to group.
It's a sort of a unit, right? And they're grouped together to create
right.
a project area.
So a better way to imagine it would be if you drew a line between all of the dots, that would be the project area, more like a skeleton. The hex is more just to show this area because we've got multiple hexes for a whole project area. So we've got one that is, you know, north would be through Coopville, another one that is south would be up to Freeland. We've got, you know, two project areas on Camino that split that island in half. So that's how they're identifying the project areas with a grouping of hexes that are supposed to be about 1,000 of these serviceable locations that need to be served.
So I'll give you what we need, the information that commissioners need on this. So I had citizens come to me just a week and a half, saying, we need you to fix the broadband in our area. And I said, and they live in this general area. And I said, well, the Port of Coopville has gotten a grant. They're working on that. They want to know how do they find out if their house is included in whatever mapping and plans there are. So what do we say to citizens about how they can find out if their problem is being addressed or not? Where can they go?
There's a couple of different avenues. The most direct one would be to redirect them to me.
Okay.
I have that information and I can show them if they, I can give them visual representations. I can give them the information over the phone. We have an inbox that they can email directly, broadband@islandcounty.gov.
Okay.
And I monitor that inbox.
And so if they give you, this is my address,
mm-hmm.
then you'll be able to tell them if they're included.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, kind of ironically, if they don't want to go through the county for whatever personal reason, the information is available online, but if you don't have internet service, then you can't really get to it.
Yeah.
But that information is available on the FCC broadband map. So you can go to fcc.gov and that map is there, or by searching for FCC BSL fabric map. And you can pull up, you can put in your address. You can see what ISP serve that location at what reported speeds. And if that information is in any way incorrect because you are the person that lives there, you can challenge that. And there's a process to do that. So, but all of that information is online. If that's not something that someone from the public is able to access because they don't have internet service at their home, then I can do that for them if they contact me.
Okay.
And I do want to make sure we're clear on what information Cody has at this point. The port of Coopville's project is different because it's not in the BEAD process and it's much further ahead.
Right.
So that would be an exception to what I'm going to say. But for this, Cody would be able to say, oh, we do identify your property as an underserved location. We have that data. Thank you. Now we know it's correct because you can confirm that verbally for me or whatever. And you're included in this project area, but that doesn't mean that project's going to get money and is going to get built. Still has to have somebody like Starlink, or well, not Starlink, that would be the wrong example. Still has to have a company, you know, whoever it happens to be. With Vitel or Comcast or someone that is going to bid on it and then successfully get the award and build out the project. So it's just because they're underserved and we know that and we have that information accurate in the database doesn't automatically transfer to, oh, you're going to get service. That's a couple steps further down.
There are multiple projects that are coming through, not just the BEAD program.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I know this is about just the MOU to support the contract we already signed. So that's what we're here for.
It's a lot of information.
But I wanted to ask a question related to broadband, but not to the topic.
Okay.
So in the selection of these footprint areas, triangle areas, how is it determined what projects go in what sequence? Is it financial viability for the providers and they pick the most lucrative areas first and sequence that way? Is it based on equity and need? Is it what, how are the areas in terms of how they get sequenced out being selected? Is it most complaints win? How does that happen?
For the BEAD program specifically, the background concept is internet for all.
So equity.
Right. So the BEAD program does not look at what is most financially profitable for any individual ISP. It's saying there's a location here, we need to serve it.
Okay.
It's like we need to get them other utilities, water, electricity, that kind of thing. So this is really bringing broadband to that forefront of it's a utility, they need to be served.
So you know that where that's going to like that's the trigger for me all the time is counties don't do utilities, right? That's, we aren't in that business. That's partly where this broadband conversation has been so difficult for us and why we have you separate from everything else, because we don't do this book of business in general. And so, you know, we're not making selections about underserved areas based on who gets water, who gets sewer, we don't do that. Like we have never done that. It's basically, can you afford to put your infrastructure in and build your home? If the answer is yes, welcome to your developable property, right?
Right.
So I think that's where I'm just trying to understand kind of how some of these decisions get made and the values that are used to make them. But ultimately they aren't our values that are being looked at. They're the BEAD program's value, the grant program that would be extending the money to do the work. Whatever criteria they have is doing the selection. It's not something that we control or influence.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. The list of BSLs was developed by the Washington State Broadband Office. So they are the ones who made the maps. They're the ones who are putting together the allocations, and they put out the notice of funding opportunity and selecting who's going to get the opportunity for each project area. We don't have any input on that. We just want to make sure that our residents are served.
Yeah, and I think that's a big part of the work that Cody's been doing and why it's important in this stage is that what we don't want to have happen is we don't want someone to go through and get an award to build out a project area when we haven't done our due diligence to get this data correct, because then that project might leave, say, 25 or 30 homes out without service because they were identified as already served or as the home didn't exist, right? And so getting it accurate is really important to make sure it is truly going to pick up everyone that we can get our data accurate to that level. Say it's 99% accurate, we'll get virtually every single one instead of someone getting an award to build out an area and everybody's really happy about that until we find out later, it's like, oh wait, there were scattered homes in there that they didn't know were homes, right?
Then those big parcels, which I understand they're parceled now, but and I think this is the same answer to the undeveloped lots, but those can get subdivided maybe for more home sites on them.
Right.
Person, none of that's being considered. Yep. It's just service for existing homes right now.
There, I am working with Planning and Public Works to develop a way so that we can take in the information from future homes being built and make that an automated system so that we can continuously update our list.
Okay.
That is a longer term project. So one thing I did want to add, Commissioner Bacon, about your question was mm-hmm. that if someone is asking, is their location, can they check on if it's actually served and by who? That's not, I don't like, say, Comcast, that's the first one that came in my head. I want Ziply or I want WoodbeTel, right?
Yeah.
That's the information about being served is agnostic to who can serve,
is.
Right? It's
yeah.
just, is there service to the home? If there's a competitive selection, that's something you're going to find in the city. Really, a lot of rural locations, you're not going to have multiple choices because it's not cost savings to build, to overbuild like that.
So your comment about the SEC.gov website and so on. So we've been having this conversation for over 4 years at this point. And 4 years ago, if you went and looked at the map indicated that every place on Whidbey Island, I can't speak to Camino necessarily, but every place on Whidbey Island was covered. And so the citizens were like, no, they're not.
Right.
And so people were going through and they were trying to update. Is it your sense now that the updates have been pulled in and that it's more accurate and that it genuinely shows that there are genuinely places that are not being served? I mean, is it now showing that we're not, that isn't all covered?
Correct. We have about 3,600 locations identified for this program in Island County alone. So that really does show more confidence in the accuracy of the information that we have. There's always room to make it more accurate, which mm-hmm. is one of the many projects I'm working on. Another reason why I'm doing this BSL verification is because there was another county that when they went through to verify the list that the state broadband office had provided, they found a full third were not real BSLs. So that kind of accuracy is kind of telling, but I feel like we should make sure that we have that information. We have, we have all this information about parcels and land within the county, addresses, homes, this information that we hold, right? So we should be able to say, yeah, this building meets that definition. This building does not. This building does, that building does not. That's not a building, that's a haystack.
So the MOU really is clarifying what the BEAD program will be doing. So Spokane County, that's how, right? Spokane County will be doing as holding the BEAD contract. And then what we are responsible for, and what we're saying we are responsible for, is providing accurate on the ground information. And that's what this MOU commits us to, is saying we will give you accurate on the ground information so that you can target your broad like BSL efforts. Is that right? Did I get this right?
The BSL efforts working with BroadLink. Yes,
working
that
with
is accurate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Working with
yes.
BroadLink.
And then the only other thing is it commits us to basically telling WASAC, yes, you should pay them. If they've done the work, we tell them, yes, you should pay them.
Okay. Well, that seems pretty straightforward. I know Janet's dying right now. She's like, my gosh, I'm like at Z in this project, and my colleagues are at like B. So I get it. We're killing you.
But it should make her happy because you're all learning more and getting much more up to speed on
the alphabet now, Janet.
You are not killing me. I am happy to have this conversation, and I'm extraordinarily pleased with Cody's work and his ability to clarify this for the board, to clarify the expectations to the public. So no, I am absolutely not dying here. I had only one clarification. We have worked hard to say we do not want to be owners operators of this, to your point that we are not infrastructure providers. But just like with other infrastructures, we do have influence on how this gets rolled out to make sure that our residents are not left out of the conversation. So Cody and Michael, our team has worked very hard to maintain that we are here to advocate for our county to be at the table and part of this service delivery. There are four maps out there. We're optimistic that all four areas of our county will get bid on, and Cody has been instrumental in this. And the only other point that is only an aside to one of our goals of equity in housing is that to access federal funding, HUD funding for affordable housing, you must have an attestation that internet is available in that community or in that area. So this work also helps us as we deploy affordable housing across our county to be eligible for HUD or for our partners to be eligible for HUD funding, because we can say, yes, our county has worked to make sure that broadband is available in that area.
I think the MOU is pretty straightforward. I don't think there's concerns, and we can probably consent that.
Mm-hmm.
I did have, based on what Janet said, a couple of follow-up questions related to the broadband work that we're doing.
So, I might answer it my presentation.
You might answer it?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not done, apparently.
Oh, I have okay. More.
Keep going.
So I just wanted to give you information about the notice of funding opportunity. It was opened on November 12th. It's going to close on the 31st of January. There's been some clarity about the letter of credit, because I know, Commissioner, yeah, you were very worried about that. We're not applying, so that's not a concern overall. But the letter of credit has been clarified more. It's more like a you need to prove you can get kind of a thing. So, you know, a free letter to the letter saying you can. It's lessened. It's easier to get a hold of. The state legislature's match requirements have been clarified, and what's going to happen during each round of funding. Essentially, round one, round two are going to happen concurrently, and then round three will be more like, well, these project areas didn't get any applications, so now the broadband office is going to go out and negotiate with nearby ISPs and say, hey, how can we make this work?
I'm gonna
pull that up. The 25% with the state match is confirmed, but it requires a public entity to be the lead applicant. So there, that did make some changes in how different ISPs were looking at how to apply. But there are other ways to get that 25% match requirement met that doesn't involve the legislature's money.
So we wouldn't be,
so under
as us not being a lead entity, we wouldn't trigger that 25% match,
okay,
for someone.
So in this case, Spokane County is triggering the 25%.
Spokane County, so Broadlink is applying in Spokane County for a handful of their locations. Their project areas.
They're the lead entity.
For their county, for their services.
Okay.
So they, as a public entity, they would qualify for that 25% ledge match. But the work that Broadlink is doing with Island County that's not involved in that 25% match.
For us to be the lead entity, we would have to have an ownership stake in the project when it was done, and we're not doing that.
We're not. Okay,
yeah.
That gave me panic, and now I'm calm again.
I included that specifically to make sure that we brought you out of that state.
Yeah.
Some broadband partners have had concerns about the low income requirements of the application, because they do have to provide a low income option for service while still meeting that minimum service level of 100 down, 20 up, 100 megabytes down, 20 megabytes up as a speed. Download, upload, I'm sorry. The application does not require specifics on that at this time. So they have time to develop a program and make it workable. It just has to say, in their application, they just need to say something like, we have a program in place already, and here's, you know, some suggested tweaks that we're looking into, or this is what we're looking at doing with local community anchor institutions to develop this program, something like that.
Is it because the speed costs more and they're afraid that the income levels won't be able to afford the speed requirements?
I'm not privy to all of the concerns that they have stated, the reasons for their concerns, just that that is something that a lot of ISPs, not just the ones in Island County, have said this is a concern. Just because, you know, not every entity has a big profit margin that can be eaten into. Some build their business model to serve an X amount of locations, and to expand beyond that breaks their business model. So that's kind of how that works. ACP, the Affordable Commissioner.
Affordable Connectivity Program.
I was missing that word. Thank you. Connectivity. There's so many different acronyms, right? So it expired. That was the federal program that provided funding to get low income locations into service so they can have connectivity. And that expired way faster than anyone expected because more people took part of it. So there has been a lot of work that Commissioner St. Clair has done for Island County and for the state, working on, you know, solutions for that. That's a federal thing. So that's something that's way beyond us. I wanted to show you the project, the full project areas, but I've been having trouble getting that pulled up. So that other picture, that was a zoomed in example, mm-hmm. but basically we have four project areas in the county, two on Whidbey and two on Kamano. There's not a lot of homes in the middle of the island, south of farther south of Coopville. So the project areas are not connected. They don't touch each other on Whidbey. On Kamano, they bump up right next to each other, right?
What about those areas then in the middle, right? Because that we know we've got internet problems there.
So there's a number of reasons why locations were removed from the BEAD program. One could be, you know, they're part of a project that's already in the middle of, you know, construction, so they will be served long before the BEAD breaks ground, or it was verified that those were not actually buildings and they were haystacks or something like that. So that's another reason why I want to go through and make sure that we're verifying our locations.
So I'm not familiar with Astound or RallyNet. Can you tell me some areas in Island County where Astound and RallyNet have served citizens?
Astound, I believe, is on Kamano, and I think they have some infrastructure in South Whidbey. Is that correct, Commissioner St. Clair?
So Astound was formerly Wave Cable, and Wave served large portions of Kamano Island, surrounding areas, and a very little bit on Whidbey. They've gone through so many mergers and acquisitions that it's hard to track the names. RallyNet's a newcomer to our state, and we're still working to understand what their intentions are. Our four major providers are Comcast, Astound / Wave, Ziply Now Bell, and Whidbey Tel.
Thank you.
And we're trying to get an idea of who's going to apply for what areas. Some would be expansion, some would just be building out further in their own area. I can make some educated guesses, but ultimately we're still waiting for those ISPs to provide that information and confirm it. We're on good terms with all of them. And we invite them to apply for any and all the project areas. And we would like to offer a letter of support because that's what we can do. We can provide information and we can say, yes, we think this is a good idea, but we're gonna provide that letter of support without favorability, saying we want someone to apply, please everyone apply. And that's how I'm wording the letter that I'm putting together.
I do have
a. The reason for that is that we really want Washington State Broadband Office to bear the responsibility for the choosing based on the standards of the BEAD applications and allow them to do their job as the grantor to fund it. But for those four ISPs that have been consistently part of our broadband action team, have been working on solutions across our county, we want to offer that we appreciate their work and that we support their efforts to bid on these maps, especially as they're already in our county doing this work.
I think that's right. Make them choose.
Have I answered any of the questions you had pending?
They were about the comp plan.
Okay, I'm getting to that. So in getting ready for BEAD, there are some things that we as a county can do besides the letter of support and data verification that will align and ease everyone's efforts. We don't need to be knocking heads necessarily, right? And there are case studies of other municipalities, a city in particular, that they did a lot of realignment of different things in their system to make it easier and more efficient cost-wise and timeline-wise for the ISPs that were doing the work in their city to be successful. One of those was road resurfacing schedule, right? That is something that we do. So I want to work with Public Works to adjust that schedule once we know where the construction areas will be. That's farther down the line, but that could be a
big
deal.
So we don't do an overlay or new chip seal, and then they go in and dig it up the next year and then have to pay to put that back to coordinate that work better so that we might hold the overlay off a year while they do that construction and then do the work, that kind of concept.
Right.
Okay, that's smart.
Yeah. Do we do franchises with these? Is this a franchise process? It is.
Yes.
So I look at this blanket permit processing.
Yes.
Thing. So that's part of, would have to be part of the franchise conversation.
Right. So I have initiated that conversation with planning and Public Works so that we can figure out exactly all of the things that we need to adjust, because one of the really great things about this program is that we know the project areas, right? So we know the locations where they need to do construction in the public right of way. We know that once the award has been made for a project area to a particular applicant, and then they are the grantee, we know they're the ones who are going to be doing the work, and we know what timeline they told the state they are going to do it on. That information won't change without significant appeals to the state broadband office, who holds the purse strings.
So one of the things that, as related to the franchise conversation, one of the things the board has a legal request in, or legal clarification requested on right now, is our authorities within granting franchises. So for example, can a water system, can during the franchise renewal, can we require a water system to show us that they have maintained their infrastructure, that they're efficiently using their water, that they've monitored that there's no leaks, that they have the financial funds to ensure that they can do replacement and repair of their system before we agree to a franchise extension, as a way of a little bit leveraging what they need from us to accomplish what we really need from them, which is maintain your infrastructure and provide level service.
Right.
In this conversation, depending on how that legal assistance request comes back, is there an opportunity to say, if you're in our right of way, our expectation is you build out infrastructure that is accessible by each home at their property line. Can we put requirements like that in the franchise? I know it's a legal question. We're still waiting to get a little bit of an answer on.
Right.
But I think if that's possible, we might be interested in saying, look, we're going to coordinate this thing. We're going to grant these franchises. But our expectation is that you're going to build this infrastructure in a way that it is financially accessible for people who come, who aren't existing right now, and that it's done in a way that doesn't leave certain income levels behind.
Right.
We think that's your responsibility if you're going to be in our public right of way.
Right.
Because what we're doing when we're authorizing the franchise something like this is we are giving you permission to be the monopoly provider of this service in this area. Right. And so we have a responsibility if we're granting that to those people to ensure that the citizens then 10 years from now, there's something in place so that they're not going to be taken advantage of by the only service provider they have. Whereas if they moved three blocks away, they might have a better deal because that particular ISP is more, you know, responsible in their treatment of the citizens. So when we say blanket permit processing, that immediately kind of gnawed at me a little bit, Cody, because we have a responsibility to ensure that we're helping citizens to have the best deal they can get.
So
Cody, I need to speak here. Mm-hmm. Jill is right that we are doing the LAR to explore what rights we have within the franchise agreement. I just want to be careful of the word monopoly. Any other provider can still come in and provide services. They may not be providing services under BEAD funding. We don't have the power to grant monopolies. That's not legal, but we are granting access through our franchise agreements. I just want to be careful with the word monopoly.
So there could be one bidder.
Right.
But it's not us granting just that bidder, one bidder who got this program, they're going in the ground. But if somebody else came along from a private company and wanted to franchise, they still have an opportunity. This is just through that grant program.
That's right. And that's really important because I don't want to put us in a position of looking like we're granting monopolies or favoritism to any of these providers.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Janet.
Thank you, Commissioner. So the blanket permit processing would be specifically to get that information that goes into the right-of-way permit. We already know a good portion of that information once the awards have gone out. We know who's going to do, what their timeline is, where they need to do the work, when they have to be done with the work, and when, you know, so we know all of that information once it's done, once the awards are in. We don't need them to be writing a new permit application every single time. And with a franchise, we could say, hey, let's speed this up. You know, we just need these pieces of information really quick. 24-hour turnaround time it may not logistically be 24-hour turnaround time, but right now permits take weeks to process. Mm-hmm. And for this program, it's in our interest to save on staff time, processing time, and you know, keeping other items that need to be processed beholden to that queue. If we can get these things done faster, because we already have verification from the state, from the federal level, that this work is going to be done and it's moving forward, then we can kind of more rubber stamp it and go forward.
We do still have to have public hearings on all new franchises.
Yeah.
This is not changing franchises. This would be a program we put together.
Yeah.
I do want to address Commissioner Johnson's comment about affordability. You cannot access these public dollars without having an affordability program. We're working on what that will look like, whether it ends up being Lifeline or they reinstall ACP or the corporate programs. They still have to, in order to accept these dollars, have to at some point in time come up with a affordability program so that we don't create infrastructure that is only accessible to the most well-to-do among us.
Right. That's one of our fears.
So a couple of other things that we can do to help the B construction would be some code adjustments. And that's another thing that I'll be working with Public Works and planning to identify where code adjustments need to happen so that we can make a blanket permit process, or that, you know, so that we can say we're doing this to the road surfacing schedule specifically for these reasons, because this is a program that's not going to happen in just 1 year. This is upwards of 10 years, right? So long after the program is you know, everything is done, we could have an entirely new board. And we want to make sure that the future...
They will have a new board.
That's not be good. That's a certainty. We're just letting you know.
I cannot see the future.
And yet we can.
So we want to make sure that this is enshrined in a way that... those coming afterwards will be able to say, you know, if we have to have a complete turnaround of leadership at the county, that they have that outline of what is BEAD and why are we doing these certain things only in these specific areas. The blanket permit process specifically would be for BEAD construction. It would not be in other locations. So with a Comcast is an example because they're a big entity, and I love to use a big entity as an example. We have a franchise with them that we're working on. This would be an amendment or an addendum to the franchise stipulating specifically, you were awarded this BEAD money for this project area. Here's the list of locations that we know you will be working on for this project with this money in this timeline, and for that we want to work with you on processing our permits faster this way, this way, and this way. So it would be very specific. It's not blanket for the whole area or the whole island. If Comcast has a franchise agreed for the whole island, that's not what it's agreeing to. It would be specific to the BEAD program to blanket the process for those locations. Now, they would probably say it's cost savings to do, you know, homes 1, 2, and 3 when only 2 is on the list, but we can still, you know, they're still going to do the servicing for 1, 2, and 3. And the last thing I wanted to point out is it's a smaller thing, but pedestals. We have some issues with pedestals. And so there's some evidence that if we prefer utility vaults over pedestals, it's less destruction that could happen because a vault doesn't stick out over ground. We have a little bit more control over the vault, right? And we can say, if you need to do work, it's right here. And then we know where the vault is specifically. Right now, pedestals, it's the responsibility of that entity, that utility provider, to tell us where their pedestals are. And they don't always tell us that they've stopped using a pedestal or that a pedestal has gone dead, and they don't necessarily take it out. So if it's our vault, we have a whole lot more
control
and ability to make sure that we know where that is and if it's still being used.
And if we hit many of the incidents with the pedestals is that we hit them with the mower, because they're lost in the grass and the vegetation. It's hard to see them. You know, the workers are doing a good job, but they come along, I found it with the mower blade.
Right.
That causes an outage,
sure.
And it causes a claim on the county because we did, you know, damage the infrastructure. And so it costs us money and it reduces service levels. So it would be good to not have those.
Thank you.
And not all of these are small, you know, not all of these are big things. You know, the preferring vaults over pedestals, that's a relatively minor thing in the grand scope of things, but it can help.
So what I was going to ask is, because I will write this down with good intentions and not be the follow-up person, so I'm now learning that I just have to get the follow-up done somewhere else for it to actually happen. But like that statement of value, which is Island County prefers vaults over pedestal, is something that should go in the comp plan utilities element, right? And so making sure that some of these things that we're talking about get in the utilities element, the access, the affordable housing conversation needs to reference access to existing broadband services as preferred placement locations for affordable housing. Just making sure, because this is a newer conversation for us, we weren't talking about broadband in 2016. So making sure that we're getting that language into that comp plan in the appropriate places. I mean, I may or may not remember, one of us may or may not remember at the table, but I think that'd be good if you could take responsibility for that. And
I haven't.
Pick up with planning. Okay, you're on it already.
Yep. He's already working with planning on some of that.
Thank you. Then I will take that off my list of things to try to remember, and I appreciate that, because I think it's important that we get those values embedded in that document.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely.
Do we have any other questions for Cody on the MOU? Sorry. We can't.
There's a lot of information, and it was a broadband update generally as well.
Okay.
Perfect. So move the MOU to consent.
Consent.
Sure.
We're fine with the MOU.
Okay.
And it was a good update on the conversation. So we're getting the hang of it.
And then I will be, when I know who is going to ask for a letter of support for the BEAD applications, I will be bringing that to you in January. I believe I'm already on the schedule for a work session then.
But our letter of support is, I might be too aggressive here about efficiency. Our letter of support is based on neutrality, right?
Yes.
So is there any reason that we couldn't just authorize the chair to sign letters of support related to this project so they don't have to keep coming back for a vote, right? Like if we know that once we approve the letter.
I was going to bring all of them at the same time.
Okay. Because I don't.
Either way, honestly, he could bring them all at the same time and the board could know. It's helpful because you'll see, oh, they're getting an application here.
Right.
Oh, they're getting three applications there. So it'll provide you some information as well.
I just didn't want it to come, like I didn't want to have to consent it every single time we needed the chair to sign something, that once we approve that letter and if it's neutral to everybody, then I think the chair should just have the authority to sign and keep it moving.
Sure.
And so, we can incorporate that at the time when we come back in case any of them are stragglers, but he'll probably have all of them at once. You won't get a whole bunch of requests.
All right.
Yeah. Because their deadline is the 31st. They will take until the last moment to turn in the applications, but with the number of municipalities that they have to work with in order, wherever they are, to get all of this done, I'm sure that their project managers have a lot of balls in the air.
I think somewhat in these blanket things where we're just being neutral, that there some kind of strategy where we just have chair authorization to just keep signing those things where the board's seen the letter, we understand what's happening. Mm-hmm. We get a little bureaucratic.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Cody.
Hey, Megan, you got something?
Good morning.
How are you?
Good morning.
I'm here.
Pass the game.
All right. So I have three contracts on the agenda today. The first one is the interagency agreement with AOC for the Language Access and Interpreter Reimbursement Program. This is for fiscal year 25. So it runs from July 1st of this year till June 30 of 2025. The maximum reimbursement for this fiscal year is just under $1,500. This has increased. Last fiscal year, it was only just over $1,000. So the more we utilize this program and ask for reimbursement, it seems to be growing as well every year. Mm. I am asking that this be approved and moved to the consent agenda.
And we budgeted extra dollars for interpreters for the court. So the chances of us not using all this is probably pretty slim if we had to put extra funding in place.
That's correct. And that's also why it's growing, is because we have been utilizing this every year.
I'm glad. That's good.
Any other questions or consented?
Consented.
We're on team consent. Okay.
The next Contract that I have on the agenda is actually for the law library. The law library board has been consenting with, or I said in conversations and researching VLEX, which is a legal research program. After seeing how it operates, and Judge Skinner actually had a trial run of this for probably a 2-week period to see how it would work. The law library board elected to discontinue our contract with Westlaw, which cost the county or the law library budget. It was over $22,000 a year, and they are moving forward with VLEX as the public legal research program for the law library. This contract is only $3,900 a year. And we are able to lock that in for a 3-year contract term.
I mean, we don't know what's the best. I mean, if the judge says this is the one we want, then heck.
Especially if it's less money. If
Absolutely.
He said this is the one we want and it was double the money, we'd have a conversation.
Absolutely.
But if he likes it, mm-hmm. we trust him and save money savings. That's fantastic.
And thank you to the judges for going for the law library board for making this recommendation.
And this $3,900 is actually for, it's a 2-terminal contract versus the 1-terminal that we had with Westlaw. So it's a significant savings.
Wow. Great.
So I am asking that it be moved to the consent agenda as well.
So I have a question. So is this one of the, will one of those terminals be in the jail? Is this one of the services at the jail? Okay. So what will the prisoners continue to use then?
So Chief Briones has a system already in place.
Okay.
They have, I don't know if it's.
That's not associated with your contract.
It is not.
It's
not.
A separate contract. Okay.
Okay. And he set that up while we still had our Westlaw subscription. It was kind of in the term where our law librarian had resigned from the position, mm-hmm. and Chief Briones knew that he needed something in place.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if he ultimately went with, I think there's one that's called Casemaker. There's a couple different legal research programs out there.
Okay, but it's not part of your contract.
It is not.
That's fine.
Can we make a note though, that we need to check with Jose to find out if it's more cost effective for us to have one countywide contract versus 2 departmental contracts? I mean, this isn't for you to have more work, maybe it's for us. But I think, I mean, again, this speaks to that kind of philosophy we're trying to push out there, which is like we did with Amazon, right? One countywide Amazon contract saves us money. Individual contracts cost us more money. Same with our phones, which drives us crazy. Every department gets their own phone contract. That's not a scale up that saves money. So let's see if we can link these things together and make sure we're not paying 2 contracts with 2 admin fees with 2, you know what I mean? I want the inmates to have access to legal research. There could be a reason why this doesn't work for them, but I'd sure like to check and see if we can get 1 county contract. Okay, we like it. I'm going with that because we're not objecting.
Yep. No, yep. Consent.
The last contract that I have on the agenda is actually Conexus Cloud Enterprise Software. This is a case management system to be utilized by adult drug court and family reunification court. This replaces our previous case management software, which is called DCCM, and I cannot tell you what that acronym stands for right now, but DCCM was $4,500 a year per program. It would not let us have one program, one subscription for both programs. Conexus actually has a fee of $4,000 a year for both to have separate programs in that case management. So it again is another cost savings.
So my question, it speaks, I suppose, to ignorance to some degree, but we have a system in the human services and the jail and public health use. What's it called? Juliet or something?
Gelada.
Gelada. Gelada. Did you look at Gelada to see if it would serve?
I haven't looked at that specifically, but I was approached when the county was looking at moving to that. They asked for all of our records to be included, and unfortunately, a lot of our records are confidential. Everyone has to sign documents. Because it's a therapeutic court environment, you cannot share everything that the therapeutic court team talks about, which is what is written down in this case management system.
This is okay. Because I actually really like that question, because I had the same one, because, you know, we've got this position that is intended to coordinate a little bit between children who are impacted by the court system and behavioral health outreach workers for children going through traumas, right? So trying to target that specific population of kids with no traumas. How we are able to share that information and the limits on what we can share will be foundational to the success of that position, right? So if a parent's going through a therapeutic court, human services would need to know that in order to track any issues related to that child, right? What schools am I reaching out to? What kids are we trying to ensure we're getting resources to? It's not necessarily about this software, but if that software doesn't interface or it's not allowed to interface, then it's going to be difficult to put together targeted sounds a little harsh, put together the programs that are really designed to serve these populations. And even though Human Services signs all the HIPAA forms and they have the licenses and they have similar confidentiality requirements, the courts are not allowed to share like therapeutic information with a behavioral health specialist.
Not without... they have to have signed confidentiality statements on file, program specific confidentiality statements, and a release of information from the participant.
So it's possible. It just requires the participants to see the benefit of why sharing could be impactful.
Mm-hmm.
But many might not, because they're afraid of sharing and how that could get used against them in other scenarios.
Mm-hmm. And family reunification court, the only way a participant can enter family reunification court is if they have an active dependency case. And so the participants who are in family reunification court have had their kids removed from their home already by the state. They're dependents of the state. They're not in their parents' custody.
So there might be a greater willingness to coordinate there.
Except a lot of that coordination is coming from the DCYF side.
Right.
Since they're the petitioners in all of those cases.
Right. No, they're key components in this. But then also at lower levels of just, you know, even if your parent goes away and they're not the primary parent, it can still be traumatizing for kids who don't understand why their parent's not there. So, I mean, again, it's the idea to take our limited behavioral health resources for early childhood support and get them more focused on kids in the community that we want to help navigate, maybe, I don't want to say track, but help navigate through the systems where we're working, we're notifying the school counselors, people have eyes on those kids. We're not just assuming, oh, well, they're, you know, 8 and poorly behaved. Maybe they're 8 and they've got a whole family trauma, and that we're not linking those pieces together.
Right.
So that still might be possible, but not through the shared software system.
Correct. We'd
prefer the shared software.
We'd prefer the shared software.
So I appreciate the question. This systems integration effort that this board is interested in doing, if we could put in an LAR that talks about, that asks the specific questions of what are the restrictions for privacy from mental health, substance abuse, because those are different, healthcare, and the court system, to get clarity on where we may have to have those business associate agreements, where the BAIs or whatever that stood for, where you make sure that anybody who touches the software signs that confidentiality agreement, where we can make sure. But I think to the overarching goal that this board has talked about and Jill has led is around systems integration, so that kids or families don't get dropped in the seams between. And so to do an LAR that asks the question of what do we need to do? What are the privacy requirements? Because they differ and the standards are, like substance abuse is way higher than mental health, for example. What are they and how do we bridge them will enable us to perhaps in the future decide which of our CRMs, our customer resource manager software systems, can achieve that goal that Commissioner Johnson is referencing. And I think where we need to begin is with an LAR. It's not time sensitive, but with an LAR that talks about what are the different privacy restrictions and then what do we need to do to bridge them so that we can decide, what we want to invest in to bridge those and do that systemic integration.
I agree. We'll get on that. So this software is not something we're purchasing. It's something we're leasing so this is, it's a $4,000 a year total, or you said two. So is it eight?
No, it's $4,000 total. Year.
And then how long is the service? How long is the contract for?
The contract is currently written where it is 1 year increments, okay. But it also is automatically renewed unless you right. do your 30 days notice for termination.
So if we get down the road a few years with this and we're able to find ways to integrate, we either have the ability to
absolutely
change or, but yep. we are not making a major upfront investment
correct. In
purchasing this software.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I'm okay with going forward, but again, we would prefer as much shared for coordination of systems as we can.
We like shared system coordination. Okay. We'll put that one on consent too then. I'm gonna go with that.
Yeah, yes. I think yeah, she could do
that. It's a bad time to turn your head. All right. Then we'll do that one.
Okay. Speaking of this coordinated, it's not for you. You can go, isn't it? But speaking of this coordinated thing, so I had to get a new, my phone was falling apart and my personal telephone was falling apart. So after the election, I went to my AT&T because I had AT&T and to get a new phone, new whatever. And I mentioned that I'd just been reelected and he says, well, so are you the executive of the county? And I said, well, yeah, I guess I am. And he said, well, why don't we try to put you into the FirstNet system so that if there's an emergency, your phone calls will be among the very, and I said, that sounds great. And so they did that. So my personal phone is now, I'll be able to do phone calls and connect with people if we have an emergency. Whereas my county cell phone is a Verizon, just a regular old Verizon one. I think that we should look into that. Let's look into that.
I'll do anything to get a new phone. My husband's not ready yet. He said, no. I said, hey, you know what would be a good Christmas gift is an upgraded phone. He said, no. So and now I'm going to tell him it's a matter of county
security. Matter of county security.
That I got to get a new phone.
That's right.
And damn it, you need a new phone? Tell John.
I think the FirstNet thing does need a higher than the iPhone 8, which is what my county phone is, or iPhone 10. It needed a higher level, I think.
I just got it.
Yeah. Did you? Yeah. Yeah, I did too. I did too. But if we can get the, if we could, we could all have FirstNet on our phones, that would be a good thing.
Okay. Well, Melanie's telling us we all have to get new phones for Christmas. I'm happy to deliver the news to my household because there's a new camera with the new phone, apparently.
There is. It's like two or three little doohickeys on the back of mine. I can't tell the difference in the pictures, but
I assume this PERSNET is available for our county phones.
It should be.
We'll check. We'll check. We'll call.
That's going to take away my excuse to get a new phone.
You still might have.
Still might have.
All right, so this is our committee assignment.
Yes, good morning, commissioners. We are here to discuss the 2025 committee assignments. Before you, you have the 2024 committee assignments. I diligently contacted every board. There's an attachment on there that says the board, the committee of the board, the meeting schedule, like any special instructions, and then who the current representative is. We have had difficulties this year with boards that were set up during, that we had some conflicting times that it was set up back to back. So those may need to be addressed during this. Just a quick note, I did reach out to Island Senior Resources. Commissioner Johnson, you have reached your term limit, so you can no longer serve.
Okay.
So that one, and then Commissioner Bacon has reached her term limit for LTAC.
Okay.
So she is no longer, I mean, she has to take a break and then she can come back.
Okay.
Who wants LTAC? Let's just start with that.
Did you want LTAC, Janet? You liked LTAC.
I'll take LTAC.
Yay!
Only because I can set the meeting times that work for me when I'm on the over there.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, that is progress right there.
So I would recommend, Commissioner Bacon, that you take Island Senior Resources, in part because they are less and less serving Camino as that work has moved over to Northwest Regional Council.
Sure, and it's down in my part of the woods.
And just for thought, Commissioner St. Clair.
I just want to make sure that ISR understands the need to serve in our most vulnerable communities and often in our most populous. So just, I'm sure you'll be on that.
I shall. Absolutely shall. And they should be serving Camino Island also. They're supposed to. It's part of their mission.
Now I'm just going to run this.
About Board of Health, it will be choosing a chair on the 17th. Camp Cog will be choosing the first meeting in January, and IRTPO will also be. So just...
Okay. And just as a reminder, because I didn't know this and I apparently missed a meeting, COG also will appoint someone to CERTEC, the Salmon Recovery Technical Committee, of which I apparently got appointed and didn't know it till halfway through the year. So we may want to add that just to track.
That is on the agenda for COG. I spoke to Megan for January.
Yeah. And don't miss a meeting is my guidance to the rest of us.
That'll teach you.
Should we talk here about who wants to be like the chair of the Board of the Health and
Janet?
IFTPO and
I think we want to make, happy to do that, but I also want to make sure we recognize that we have other members on that board and have that conversation there. I don't want to pre-decide anything.
Well, the Board of Health, I think it needs to be one of us, don't you think?
Well, yeah. I just want to have that conversation with our partners.
You're right. They elect, but we just need to make sure we have a concept so we know who's carrying what burdens. So,
yeah.
So,
and I'm happy. You guys know I love that.
You like that too.
Yeah, but I was planning on Janet carrying the Board of Health burden because, I had a little breakdown at one of them, so I don't think I should be chairing.
Okay.
So I can leave if I need to leave.
So you can leave if you need to leave.
I don't think we'll do that again. Won't happen again. That but I'm just once, saying. That was a bad time. Combination.
Okay.
Questions I had. Does anyone have any interest in serving on I've been serving on it because it's in Mount Vernon, but the meetings are often virtual. Is the Northwest Workforce Development Council, they're often virtual. We must be a participant because the four counties have a governing role in that, which means twice a year we have a meeting. I'll continue. I juggle it between some things, but I didn't know if either of you would be interested in being on the WDC. It's very much aligns with our work on equity and making sure that we're creating economic opportunities for people in all our counties. Our biggest workforce size is of course in Oak Harbor. So I wanted to offer up that I can continue, but I also, and there's some really good works, and we've navigated a CEO change. Those were some tumultuous waters for a little bit. Everything's settling down. Things are moving forward in a really positive, good way. We're reconnecting to the state WDC group. And Commissioner Johnson, it'd be great if you'd be interested.
I can be interested. Does it conflict with anything?
No, ma'am, it does not.
Okay, I can be interested. I think what you just described eliminates some of my concerns about when I was on the board and I didn't know what they were talking about ever. So I think maybe some of the changes you described will aid in that, help me with that.
And the board's the board's strategic work is often driven by the members who are, you know, EDASC and business leaders and all of that. And so the work we did to help navigate a leadership change and get us to the place we need to be for today's economy and today's workers, that work is done. And the four commissioners were active in that transition. And so you've got a great team and reconnected at the state.
I like it.
I did reach out to Northwest Regional Council to confirm their meeting dates. They are all on Thursdays from 10 a.m.
They have agreed to have a board conversation about moving it to a different Thursday so that it's not in direct competition with the other Thursday meeting.
Yeah, April 17th, July 17th, and December 18th, Darla just sent it. So
yeah. And we will have a future board conversation of whether we can do that on a different Thursday. Otherwise, Northwest Clean Air Agency and that one, I navigate between the two, and it's not been a conflict. I talked to Mark this week and he said, yeah, we don't need you on this week. So I'm going to the regional council, but we are going to have a conversation about whether it can be on a different Thursday. There's no real reason they have to be on the exact same Thursday. And there are other commissioners that sit on both boards.
Okay, because if that was just a you conflict, I can go up back on that board, but I think it's important for you to be on it because they're delivering direct service on Camino now, like more direct service. So I would really hate for you to
I'm happy to step aside and you can.
No, I'm not volunteering. I was just volunteering if Janet had a conflict.
Oh, okay.
Did you want to step aside and you want me to do it?
I'd be happy to step aside. I have, chair.
Fine.
Thank you.
I'm fine. That's a fine. Fine. I'm fine. I just needed a little break from it. It's okay.
You had a little break.
Yeah, I had a little break. It's all right. I can do it.
You also have North Sound BHASO, which is the second Thursday at 1:30.
I know.
That's Thursdays.
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay.
They're kind of linked up.
They are.
Actually. So I just needed a little break. When they make me the chair, I have to start quitting. I don't. Like, no. That's really the tipping point for me is when you start to getting too close to the leadership position or you have it, I have to get off that committee.
And Northwest Regional Council only meets 3 to 4 times a year versus some of our other ones that meet more regularly.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm happy to do it. Okay.
Janet, are you going to do EDC again, or Jill, are you interested in EDC?
I'll stay with EDC because I think I mentioned this to someone recently that I want to make sure in the strategic planning they recognize that SEDS is the center of their work for the county's priorities, and especially as we go into comp planning. So I'm in the midst of those conversations trying to make sure we stay the course on what we've already invested in and what is already work that's been well done.
Commissioner Bacon, you're keeping EDs?
Yeah, it's District 1.
Okay. All right, Commissioner Johnson, ICOM.
If somebody else wants ICOM, they're going to try to pass a tax, so you're welcome to take it. I guess that's me.
Melanie, also just so you know that Swiss, the chair of the board, goes to the e-board of Swiss per the charter and bylaws, so you are... Generally, you would take that role unless you chose to delegate it. We can talk more about that later, but I wanted you to be aware that the role by charter goes to the chair of the board on the e-board.
The role by charter goes to the chair. You mean to be on the e-board? You're not saying I have to chair of the SWIS, for God's
sake. No, you're just designated a member at the executive board.
Okay. I delegated to Janet.
You delegated to Janet? Well,
because for consistency, because I think it's just healthy to have consistency. But sure. If you have a passion around SWIS.
I don't. I mean, I think that potentially they could do good work, but there's other things I'm more dedicated to. Janet, are you interested in continuing that serve as on the e-board?
That's what Snohomish County does, is it generally gets delegated to Nate. Whatcom circulates it, and Skagit circulates it, and San Juan will likely continue with Jane. We are entertaining, we have the meeting Thursday about SWIS, and likely from the feedback I've gotten from other counties, we'll be rolling down the broadband subcommittee, so that takes all that work away, which is great because we've achieved a lot of our plans and goals. I'm happy to sit on the e-board. I do want to emphasize the importance of the work plans that have been done by Trent on transportation and the regional transportation strategies, as well as Jill's well aware of the behavioral health stuff, which tends to follow BHASO. So as long as I can count on the two of you to stay engaged with that work.
Certainly I continue to be involved with the transportation.
We'll do our subcommittee work if you want to do the e-board work.
That's fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Janet.
Joint Tourism Board.
Are you having a good time with the JAG?
I can do it. It's just I find it a harsh gear shift from like county government to all of a sudden tourism. But I think we had this conversation the other day about really anchoring them in their responsibilities to serve the entire county. And so I'm happy to do it because that's a Oak Harbor Camino problem. Respectfully to the group, we only.
Yeah, they got to quit being completely just all about South Whidbey and recognize that they are charged with serving all of the county. Yeah. And because of just the implicit or unconscious bias, I don't know.
It's because we have so many chambers of commerce.
Well, and I'm sorry, it's a group that was meant to serve the whole and not their own self-interest. You don't join a board for your own self-interest. You join a board because you recognize that the board's charter is to serve the good of the whole. So I would respectfully, if that was at all respectful, remind them of that.
As my first action as the member of the JAB, I think maybe we should have them come to a work session and talk to the full board about our expectations as mm-hmm. the largest funder. Mm-hmm. So there, I'm going to make my first like aggressive move about culture shift so that they're not just hearing it from me and then I'll carry the water throughout the year. But I think it's important they hear it from all three of us.
Yep.
What we expect. Okay, then I'll do it.
Okay, good.
As long as I have backup on my force for this.
You do.
Law and Justice Council, Commissioner Johnson.
We're talking about the jail primarily, so that if somebody else is interested in that jail, being part of that jail conversation, that's where that the other place it will happen outside of the jail subcommittee. Okay. I'm happy to keep doing it, or we can diversify our voices.
I think that you've been on that for a long time. You have a lot of knowledge, and I appreciate that. My only concern, Jill, is that we're now putting you on a whole bunch of things. Is that okay?
Well, it looks like that because everything else is chair. Mm-hmm. So we're not,
the chair takes over a lot of things, Melanie. That's what we always do.
I haven't taken more than I think I'm up one, but I dropped eight. So
I'm cool with you continuing on that particular board.
I think as long as our Law and Justice Council and our jail planning continues to focus on the work that you've been leading in the area of restorative justice and not punitive justice, I continue to see that support from our judges, our sheriff, from you, and that's all I care about is that we're leaning into the fact that restorative justice really helps people heal and communities to heal. And ultimately, once you do that, rehabilitation is cheaper for the taxpayer. So I know you get that, and I trust you to continue to lead that conversation.
Well, with that group, I don't think you could lose that conversation because a lot of the members were after Keaton Ferris. So they have a very restorative heart, the members of that committee. So, okay, Law and Justice.
Okay. Commissioner Bacon, you're going to left?
Oh, yeah, that's, you know, 5 minutes once a quarter. It's okay. Not a big deal.
All right. Marine Resource Advisory Council.
I really like that. Does anybody else want that? I'm happy to stay with it if unless somebody else wants it.
I also like it because you learn a lot, but
you do.
But I also I like it different than Melanie likes it, so I think you should have it.
Well, the reason that you like it different than I do is there is maybe the one argument against me doing it is because I fall into that advocacy role when I'm on there, and I don't know that that's necessarily always the very best.
I don't know that I add value. I say things like, why do we care about kelp? And
then I'll be on the MRC.
let's let Melanie stay on MRC. She knows why we care about kelp.
I'm like, it's an indicator. What? Like, I don't, I, poor group. I'm sure they are like, please God, don't send her back. But I learned a lot. So that's what I mm-hmm. like about it. It's like going to college for me. But Janet, do you like that one or?
No, I'm fine with Melanie doing it because I've got the Puget Sound Partnership responsibilities continuing.
Okay.
All
right. Solid Waste Advisory Committee.
Well, I love that one unless someone else wants it.
Oh, yeah. I love garbage. No, I'm kidding. You can have that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm really like fired up.
Although, Jill, the one thing that is really challenging is this conversation about where we can find a safe site for transfer stations and how we, and I know you know that, but it is, I don't know if SWAC knows that this issue of safety and risk management at our transfer stations and making sure that we're moving forward with that. I mean, there's a whole bunch of conversations that go into this. That one has proven to the county to be significant.
Yeah, that's a good call out. You're right, because we've been focused on recycling and then what do we do about like clothes? How can we divert clothes from the waste stream and
more. Right. And I mean, fundamentally, that and the new Coopville site, you know, trying to move that to success.
Right.
Remodeling, for lack of a better word, of the Coopville transfer station and figuring out our site needs for the Kamano transfer station. Those are pretty big deals and pretty expensive endeavors for the county. So I just hope we can elevate that a little bit, but I'm happy to have you. I know you've got it.
I didn't have that. So
I'm going to give these to you then. A citizen came to my Monday meeting.
You pre-brought problems?
I did. A citizen came to my Monday meeting and with his white paper that he wrote for the Whidbey Climate Action and a presentation because it has to do with organics, which we have to do organic recycling. And he's got all these ideas. Apparently he used to be in charge of recycling in New Zealand or something like that.
Okay.
I mean, this is a person who actually has huge credentials and he's one of our residents. That's what I asked him. I said, are you on the SWAC? And he said, no, somebody is the WSU person has suggested to him. He should be on SWAC. He totally should. So,
all right.
Yeah.
I'll look at it.
Okay.
North Sound BHSO.
Yeah.
I mean, I like that one.
Okay.
I would say we need to transition, but there's really no value in transitioning right now unless we know what Janet's thinking. But if we're all terming out soon, there's no value in transitioning to hand the conversation to somebody else.
Russell's terming.
Yeah. I'm not putting you on the spot right now. I am putting you on the spot next year.
Just to circle back around, Commissioner St. Clair Northwest Clean Air Agency.
It's easy. It's a well-run board, and it's okay. Right there in my backyard.
Yeah.
And they have $500 chairs.
I
heard. Who
knows? And these may just be individual. The Ecosystem Coordination Board, a Puget Sound Partnership, you want to keep that, correct, Commissioner St. Clair?
That's what she said.
And I think that's a WASAC appointment anyway.
Okay.
No, wait. It's not. I'm the representative to our LIO. So anyway, it doesn't matter. But yes, I will continue.
You're still going to continue on the LIO.
Yeah. I'll continue on the LIO and on this board. So yes.
Okay.
And it's stuff I know. It's not easy to master. It is tough stuff.
And risk pool, Commissioner Bacon?
Oh, sure. Unless you wanted to do that one, Jill.
No,
once they stopped going to sexy places, you weren't interested anymore.
Then it became actuarial report. So I'm like, well, just kidding.
Hey, Commissioner Johnson, I gave you the LSC calendar. So you wanted to do the state?
Well, I did want to do LSC this year, which I heard was okay because we picked one of my priorities. So I wanted to just bird dog that priority.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then Commissioner St. Clair, you're going to keep the federal?
Well, Jill, now we're in a tough one because that is probably the most important of these things. One of the most important of these to me because of the broad range of issues that we're facing and the fact that we've got some significant challenges in transportation funding in other things. So I did not know, my apologies, I did not know you were interested in moving forward in it. And I am also, so we've got a pickle.
Jill.
Okay.
Then will you keep the federal?
The federal meets like twice a year.
Okay.
It's not a big deal.
Okay. Are there any other, Commissioner.
I do want to be really clear that I was very interested in this. So Jill, if it's super important to you, then we need to talk more about the state LSC.
Well, yeah, I was under the impression that this was already predetermined and worked out. And so I've already made plans to start doing the LSC work.
No, that's not what I heard from staff. So Jennifer, I think we had some confusion on this one.
So I just did an eeny, meeny, miny, mo, Janet, and eeny, meeny, miny, Jilled. So there's a two.
Okay then.
There's the WASAC Board of Directors meeting, and those are for Commissioner St. Clair. Yeah, but just.
No, I'm not on the board. I'm only an alternate this year.
Oh, okay. Because we have those dates written down also that you
have. Yeah, I'm only an alternate on that.
And then I've provided the ICOM meetings and the alternate dates.
Members and alternate board members can go to LSC meetings. That it's not one of those meetings that only one commissioner can be at. Because when Helen was president, I went to LSC meetings.
And you went to some last year also.
Right. So I think that the alternate board position allows participation from Island County having a strong voice on multiple issues down there.
Good.
That's what I would encourage.
Good.
Okay.
Okay. Jansu and NACO, right? I'm not doing NACO.
No, are
you doing NACO?
No. One of these days I'm going to have to go to one of their things, but no.
That's the same kind of thing. We could all go. But Janet's the representative from Island County nationally, like voting person.
And she seems to go every.
But she's on a board.
Yeah. So that's.
I'm on the Health Policy Committee. The annual conference I did not go last year, the one where we vote on our, platforms and all that. I didn't go last year, and I don't think anybody from our county went to the one last year. I think it was in Florida. And I don't know if anyone participated remotely on the setting of the NACO policy stuff. So
I think that maybe what I'd like to say as delicately as possible is, given our anticipated administration and your involvement in healthcare, do you feel like this is the time for you to not be on the NACO board?
Well, I'm going to continue on the NACO Health Policy Committee. Okay. That's a WASAC appointment. And that is the area in which I have the greatest fear of what may happen administratively. And I can certainly represent us at NACO in general as the Island County representative, either joining virtually. We just never really talked about it last year. And I think we just let the ball drop on the annual conference. Because I wasn't going to go to Florida in July.
I'm not like a huge NACO fan, but I feel like this is maybe a time that we should.
I agree with you. I'm really concerned that we have to lean in on what's happening nationally and just keep our eyes and ears open.
And I don't have the patience for that because I will raise my voice.
All right. Add that in so that I know that it's, if it's not
listed for me, then I don't necessarily pay attention to it, as demonstrated by last year. I did not plan to attend and didn't, we never talked about it. So, all right.
The list from WASAC on the committees that we are on for WASAC,
yep.
Because I think I'm on two behavioral health ones, but I'm honestly, like, I don't know if they've stopped. If I know we had a meeting scheduled with one, but there were two, and I can't tell which one's which anymore.
Yeah, and the one that she had was every Tuesday at 10 a.m.
No, oh, I know that was on purpose, by the way. That was the network adequacy subcommittee yeah. that we started with WASAC, and we got going, and then they moved those meetings to a date that I have said clearly I cannot participate in. That is because I asked too many questions.
They and so they set it up just so you couldn't attend. You
I
think?
Swear to you, yes, I swear. Because there's many other dates that meeting could happen.
Sure.
And so, I mean, if that's the case and they're not budging, then WASAC needs to get another person on it, because I don't want to hold a spot and not be able to participate. I just want to make sure I know what WASAC thinks I'm doing.
Okay, I will follow up on
okay,
that.
Okay, yeah, because I'm getting a little confused. And that healthcare authority, they're dumping me.
I have to check out in 5 minutes, and I'm wondering if I can just abandon the rest of the agenda here and say, yes, I support the things that are before us.
Sure.
WCRP, quickly, there is a our that's yearly.
That's me.
Yeah.
That's
so
Melanie.
That will just be Commissioner Bacon. So I think that pretty much solved itself.
Yeah, we just authorized to them who we're putting on it.
Yeah, and it would just be Commissioner. Last year it was Commissioner Bacon. So if you want to continue with that.
Yeah.
Consent is good.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner St. Clair.
All right. We did well on that.
Yep. You have a good time in Olympia, Janet.
Well, it'll be interesting, this transportation issue. Today's ferries, so it's a little bit of a known conversation, but thank you. Have
Let's
a good day.
Out why the state doesn't support the ferry commission that they formed in terms of public records, and how something can be their committee but our responsibility.
Yeah.
If that topic comes up even as an aside, I'd be interested to understand their logic of forming an advisory committee and then leaving us with the legal responsibilities of managing it.
Hey, I'll ask.
We got okay. two of those.
Okay, yeah. I just am, I'm concerned. I'm a little concerned about that structure. But if it doesn't come up, it doesn't have to today. Bears, just remind me. Okay, you're done. I'm sorry. You gotta go. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Are we adjourned? We have any add-ons?
No, ma'am.
Okay, we did it.
Good job, us.
Two left.
2 minutes.